In this edition of the Institute for Jewish Spirituality's podcast, Rabbi Sheila Peltz-Weinberg reads from her book, Surprisingly Happy, an Atypical Religious Memoir.
Chapter 18, Discovering Meditation, Barry, July, 1990. The first year I was sober, I reconnected with Ed, the boy I'd known in high school, the guy I went to the senior prom with. He was in love with me back then, but I was looking for someone more edgy. I thought of him after 25 years and wondered what had become of him. Maybe I was ready for him. Ed was divorced, a professor, and a father of two boys. He was still very handsome, and I loved his blue eyes. Miraculously, we felt like home together. He was still in love with me, but this time I was okay with that. Soon after we reconnected, he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. He told me I didn't need to stay with him now because that was not what we bargained for. I thought the opposite. Why had I come back into his life except to give him the love and hope he needed to fight the illness and to triumph? We read Bernie Siegel's Love, Medicine, and Miracles. We knew Ed would be an extraordinary patient. He was, and he died. I was completely overwhelmed with grief. He died 2 days after the first anniversary of my sobriety, and a day before Abby's high school prom. I was held through the pain by friends and strangers and by my own ability to pray that I had found in recovery. I also went on healing retreats at Kripala with the yogis and the Abode of the Message with the Sufis. There was no comparable Jewish place in those days. Or maybe I just wanted to do the healing away from the Jewish places where I was known and recognized as a rabbi, someone who helped others but didn't need help herself. Months later, I got a note from two friends from Benot Aish urging me to consider applying for the job as rabbi of the Jewish community of Amherst. The only thing I knew about Western Massachusetts was Kripalu. I loved the idea of being near the beautiful mountains. I was open to moving on, away from the place of my mourning. My daughter was in college and my son was ready to begin high school. It was time for a change. Ezra and I came up to Amherst for an interview. I loved quaint New England in snowy December. The head of the search committee was an exuberant sprite of a man named Ted Sloven. Aside from being a founder of the synagogue, he was also a board member of Insight Meditation Society, IMS. "You realize, Rabbi," Ted told me, "that we are down the road from one of the premier Buddhist meditation centers in the country. What an opportunity for you to have this resource for your own spiritual renewal. Amherst, you understand," Ted said in his dramatic way, "is midway between Kripalu and IMS. I was curious about meditation. I arrived in Amherst in the summer of 1989. The following summer, I registered for a 10-day retreat at IMS, taught by Christopher and Sharda. My roommate was not respectful of the vow of silence and enjoyed schmoozing. I also had a friend who invited me for two long chatty walks during the retreat. Otherwise, I was alone with my own mind, sitting, walking, eating, doing my yogi job, pot washing, sitting, walking. Finally, evening arrived and Christopher or Sharda would speak, giving me some relief from my own mind, then sleep, dreams, getting up early, and beginning again. The sitting was painful. My back, neck, and shoulders hurt most of the time. Much of the time, I felt sleepy and distracted and could not pay attention to the directions. I felt hopeless, useless, inferior, a fraud as a spiritual person. Despite all of this, the teachings were incredible. It felt as if the teachers had been in my mind throughout the day. Their words created a sense of spaciousness. The process of returning again and again to the simple object of attention, the breath, the step, the pot I was scrubbing, expanded the dimensions of my mind. All the painful thoughts, the judgments, the fears, the endless desires for this or that to be different, loosened their grip. I understood that the teachers were teaching Buddhism, and the stories they told and the texts they quoted came from that tradition. At IMS, however, it was always very clear that no one was interested in your becoming a Buddhist. This was critical for me. As the days unfolded, I started to translate the teachings into a Jewish spiritual language. I understood that the Buddhist reference to suffering, craving, and the conditioned I that always wants attention and amusement was equivalent to what Judaism refers to as false gods and idolatry. How indeed could I recognize and weed out idol worship from my heart? How could I end suffering? How could I heal the wounds that forced the walls of separation to be erected, that kept me from myself, others, life itself, or God? How could I see the transient and the fleeting and distinguish that from the eternal and enduring? How could I deal with my own destructive habits without destroying others or myself? How could I recognize what is fantasy and what is truth? What are the stories that rule my life? How do any of us do any of this? These are Buddhist questions, Jewish questions, recovery questions, human questions. I am moved by the practice of mindfulness. My entire being is engaged. I see how the stories in my mind proliferate. I see that when I allow my attention to rest on sensation in the body, there is dynamism, change, and instability. Things loosen up. I am less a victim. I open myself to the infinite power of pure awareness, the light of presence. I open to the nameless energy of life that just is. I open to compassion. In Jewish language, I open to God's love, the power that heals, forgives, comforts, and through the pure act of presence, ultimately transforms. I see infinite references to this process of liberation in Jewish prayer, in the texts of Torah, and in the practices of a Jewish life. I experience how hatred and contention lock in and experience and deepen suffering. I understand through attentive patience and self-honesty that the more open I am to what is arising in this moment, the more balanced and clear is my mind, and the more able I am to make wise and compassionate choices. The more shalom, wholeness, or peace is created, the more tikkun, mending, the shattered and divisive nature of reality is achieved. I experience spontaneous lines of Jewish prayer rising in my heart that mirror my own inner sense of liberation. How goodly are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Rebecca. Make me a sanctuary, and I will dwell in your midst. The eternal dwells in the midst of the storm. The winds rage, and home is not shaken. Fear, desire, hatred, delight, success, loss, all come and depart. The home of the soul stays luminous and embracing. Windows open, doors open, curtains blowing in the breeze. Foundation in the center of the universe, in the flow of timelessness, in the eternity of love and compassion. Chesed, Rachamim. The teachings and the practice of mindfulness become part of my life. They serve to inspire, sustain, and strengthen me. I begin to teach mindfulness to Jews using the language of Jewish story and symbol. The key factor is that people are given a chance to see for themselves the nature of their minds, to know impermanence personally, to see the insubstantiality of the separate self, to experience the interconnection of all beings, and to know viscerally both the causes of suffering and the end of suffering. Mindfulness practice contains the same principles that have always moved me. The principles are easy to articulate and difficult to practice. I ask myself in this moment to tell the truth, to be engaged with a community of seekers and practitioners, to keep returning to my intention, to develop tolerance for the other, the different, the unknown, the unpleasant, the frightening, to develop curiosity and a keen desire and ability to listen. Listen, listen, Shema Yisrael, listen up, Israel, is the passionate Jewish affirmation of unity and interconnection. Mindfulness gives me a new lens with which to interpret and understand the sacred teachings of my people and more deeply apply those teachings to my life. To what end? To live with more awareness, more compassion, more wisdom, and more love. I discover that I cultivate wholeness when I learn to pay awakened attention without pushing away, grabbing, or fleeing. This leads me to a contentment that transcends the vagaries of changing phenomena, the contentedness of the psalmist who wrote, Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha, happy are those who dwell in your house, the house of this body-mind, and the house of life in this complex human reality, and the house of this struggling planet can all be embraced when we sit down and partake of the infinite clarity of awareness. Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha. Just to take our seat and enter fully into this moment is to recognize that we are part of something so much greater than ourselves. Happy is one who sits in your house. Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha. We relax into this moment, remembering that we do not possess this house, this moment, this body, this world. And that makes it all the more precious. In the simplicity of returning again and again to this breath, this sensation, this sound, we are practicing happiness, the happiness of peace and contentment, the happiness of feeling connected, the happiness of greeting the sun in the morning or just taking another breath, the happiness of knowing that this bad mood will pass, and this harsh thought has no substance. The happiness of letting go of ill will for this moment. The happiness of allowing desire to come to its natural end in the mind. The happiness of growing still. The happiness of seeing life and death in everything and not being afraid. Is this political? Well, I think it is. This happiness doesn't hurt people we do not know. This happiness doesn't tell us to be ashamed of growing old. This happiness doesn't tell us we aren't okay but can fix that if we try hard enough. This happiness doesn't attract a lot of buyers and sellers. It calls for careful cultivation like a field of precious jewels. Moment after moment, it calls for dedication and community and willingness and faith. It calls upon wisdom and courage. It is itself a child of goodness, so simple, so huge, but it is the only happiness there is.
Dang, dang, dang.